Pippity Poppy, give me the Zabbit.
Yes, sir.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you once again. Before we get into the Odell extension, the Jets game, and what to look forward to in preseason game 4, you know what we got to do? We got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN, follow Weiss at NYG Daily, follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. Smash the fucking subscribe button. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. No reason you shouldn't get these episodes fresh to your phone every Wednesday morning. Let's get into everything. Weiss, first of all, welcome back. How are you?
Ethan, how's it going, brother?
Did you know that people want you to stick to football and they don't care about your Hawaii honeymoon?
Yeah. I got that.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous.
And my political takes.
And your political takes, but we
don't. Even though it wasn't a political take, but yeah, anyway.
It was just a fact. Whatever. I mean, we've gotten political on this podcast before. It wasn't the first time, won't be the last time. Let's start with the Odell Beckham Jr. contract extension, our Lord and Savior. He finally got the deal. There's a lot to talk about when it comes to the contract. Everyone should know the numbers by now. 5 years, $95 million, $65 guaranteed. Where do you want to start with this? I think one place that I'd like to start is at least how he handled the contract situation, because I think I've got an interesting perspective on it, or at least one that a lot of people will disagree with. And hey, if I'm wrong, let me know. You guys tweet at me, tweet at Weiss. Here's where I'm conflicted, right? Obviously, as a fan, I love the way that he handled it. He showed up to OTAs. He's been showing up to practice. He didn't hold out. It was a necessary evil. Now, don't get me wrong. He needed to show up due to how he's handled certain situations in the past and people questioning his maturity. Now, there's never been a doubt about his talent or the fact that he's a good teammate or that people like him. But, you know, the media perception or how he would be cast in the media would have been far unlike how the media is treating Khalil Mack and Aaron Donald in their contract disputes.
Right.
Now, for him to show up, participate, have a positive attitude, do his rehab work, get along with Gettleman, get along with Shermer, that is all amazing. As a fan, I love to see it. However, from a player perspective, it's just flat out dumb. It really is. Now, did he have to do it? Probably, because he would have been cast as a villain, and you know, John Marin needed to see him, handle this in a positive and mature way. But don't get it twisted. This is not how players should go about handling contract disputes now or moving forward, because one tweaked ankle, one tweaked hamstring, God forbid a torn ACL in OTAs or training camp running a route, and that contract is out the window. So he took a risk. It paid off both for the Giants and for OBJ, right? He gets his money. The Giants get him on a – we'll break down the numbers, but it's a good deal.
Right.
For the most electric receiver in the game, the most marketable receiver nationally and internationally, and the heart and soul of this Giants offense. So end of the day, we're all thrilled. Odell's going to be a Giant. Hopefully for the rest of his life, at least for the next 6 years. Where do you want to start talking about the contract, or do you want to comment on how I think he handled?
I think you're being a little harsh toward him. I don't think dumb is the right way to call it. I think if he held out...
Necessary evil.
I think if he would have held out, there would have been a lot of unnecessary noise in his direction. I don't think that
Let me ask you this: if he holds out, do you think that we're sitting here today talking about his extension?
No.
So there you go.
I don't.
Yeah.
I don't. I think we're sitting here now. Do I think he would have held out into games? Probably not. I think that's where the Giants would have said, "Hey, we own your rights. Right. If you don't want to show up, then that's fine. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I think he would have shown up probably around, you know, this week, next week, however. But I thought he handled it perfectly. I think.
No, don't get it wrong. I think he handled it as perfectly as he could have given his situation. Right. I don't think it should serve as the model for players moving forward.
No. But, I mean, if you look at Aaron Donald's situation, you know, he has yet to get paid. And he sat out last year into the regular season. You look at Khalil Mack, he's not even talking to the new head coach in Oakland, John Gruden.
Well, I'll chalk that up to Gruden being sort of old school and not really understanding player politics in this day and age.
Fine.
But whatever.
We'll say this. Yeah. Neither of them have showed up. And while we're hearing that Aaron Donald might be close, Khalil Mack, I mean, they're as far apart as can be.
Yep.
So I think Odell looked at the situation and said, if I stay away, what do I have to gain? You know, there's a chance they could, you know, play hardball with me and say, you know what, we're not going to negotiate with you until you show up. And he could have been forced to play this season on that $8 million player option. Now, that's a huge risk. So I think Odell showing up, you know, basically buying into what this new regime is selling, I think that shows not only a sign of maturity, but I think we talked about this. It sort of showed that I'm here, the ball's in your court. I'm ready to talk whenever you are. So I'm glad it got done before week one. I think you and I talked about it, you know, when do we start to get nervous about it? And I think that's around this time, if it hasn't been done this week or into next week, that's when we probably would have started to get a little bit nervous about it. But got done at a perfect time. I think it's a great deal for the Giants. It's a great deal for Odell. I mean, if you look at it from both ends of the spectrum, mm-hmm. Odell wanted 20, he got 19.
Yep.
But he got $65 million of that guaranteed.
And that's what matters.
Yeah, which is $10 million more than I believe what Mike Evans got. Mm-hmm. So Odell, if you're looking at it from Odell perspective, he's happy. He's a high paid receiver in the league, $65 million guaranteed. And if you're the Giants, you know, you got the star player locked up, you know, until 2023. And what you essentially now have is you don't have to worry about this distraction of, you know, is this deal going to get done? Is this deal going to get done? Because you talked about it. Odell is, I mean, he's either the face or one of the faces of the NFL. I mean, he is
I would argue that he is the face.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a single other player in this league that has the recognizability that he does internationally.
I agree with you. I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. So having that distraction of this star player, because we know what happened back in March. We know how a small or idiotic statement turned into some big media circus. And they were able to play it down. But I think the important thing was the meeting between Pat Shurmur and Odell in L.A. Once they were able to get locked in, I think then Odell sort of felt that somebody had his back in the building. And from there, he was able to sort of come to this day and get the deal done. And he's the highest paid receiver. He is, in my opinion, deserving of it, every penny of it. Could he have gotten more if he wanted to play hardball? Probably. But it's a pretty good deal for him and a pretty good deal for the Giants.
Yes, sir. Fastest to reach 250 career receptions. Fastest to reach 4,000 career receiving yards. Most games with 125-plus receiving yards in his first three seasons. Most receiving yards in his first two NFL seasons. Most receptions in the first 15 games of his career. Most consecutive games with 130-plus receiving yards and one touchdown, tied with Patrick Jeffers and Calvin Johnson. Most games with 10-plus receptions, 100-plus receiving yards, 1-plus touchdown receptions, and season tied with Torrey Holt.
When you look at he's played in 47 career games, all-time receivers, their first 47 games. Odell, 313 receptions. That's most. He's first on that list on that. 4,424 yards. He's second on the list. Touchdowns, 38. He's tied for fifth. 100-yard games, 19th. That's first amongst all-time receivers through their first 47 games. I mean, the production is there.
Yeah, and if you guys want to rewind the podcast, grab some Lubriderm and tissues, I wouldn't blame you because those stats are unbelievable.
And so we got the stats thing. Now it's this whole other aspect of it that people want to bring up, and it's odd because people only want to bring this up when it comes to Odell. It seems like the production isn't enough for people. Odell has to also draft better for the Giants.
Yep.
Odell has to also coach better for the Giants. Mm-hmm. Odell also has to throw better for the Giants, yep. play defense better for the Giants, sack the quarterback better for the Giants, play special teams better for the Giants.
Yep.
It seems as though people are looking at this and saying, wait a minute, this team has gone 6-10, 6-10,
right.
3-13, no playoff victories. Is he worthy of this? Well, it seems as though people don't understand how football works. In order to win games, you need great players, great talents. In order for you to have great players, great talents, you have to draft well. And when you draft well, you have that player on a 5-year contract, where you have the luxury of having him on a smaller cap hit, on a smaller salary, for you to work, you know, to use that to your advantage.
Now,
but when the time comes to pay up, you pay up. It doesn't work the way you want it to work, where because your team has sucked outside of him, that means he should take the hit for that when it comes to his personal payday.
Right.
And I'm seeing a lot of people get confused on how this works, which is surprising if you ask me.
I wouldn't say confused. I would just say willfully ignorant. But you know who doesn't have a Super Bowl to his name? Antonio Brown. You know who else doesn't have a Super Bowl to his name? Larry Fitzgerald. You know who else doesn't have a Super Bowl to his name? Mike Evans, who just got paid. So you know what? You can be a great talent getting a lot of money. At the end of the day, if your GM has no fucking clue what he's doing, that ain't your fault. If your offensive line is invisible and you have one of the worst defenses in the league, that ain't Odell's fault.
Nope. You know, well, it seems as though – here's the funny thing about this whole – what I've been reading about and saying about, it's like, well, the production is there, but they aren't winning games. Well, why aren't they winning games?
And if you look at the production on the field when Odell is not there, the difference is literally a full touchdown. That's unheard of. That's unheard of. That's irreplaceable. He is literally irreplaceable in this offense.
It's funny to me because nobody ever brings this up. But the year before Odell got to New York, Eli Manning threw 27 interceptions and he led the league in interceptions with 27. Now we can sit here and talk about it was whose fault it was and he threw 27 interceptions. When Odell got there, he had 28 interceptions combined the next two seasons.
Yep.
There's a stat, and I wish I had it in front of me, but I saw it, I believe, last year to start the season, and it was on touchdowns scored, how many yards after catch they got.
Right.
And I think Antonio Brown was like 20-something, and Jordy Nelson was like 17. Odell was 210. So what does that tell you? That tells you with the ball in his hands, he has done the most to score points.
He literally won them 4 or 5 games alone two seasons ago when he was healthy.
The Baltimore game, I was there.
And can we cut the shit with this Odell's injury-prone nonsense? I see some people throwing that out there. He had a tweaked hamstring his rookie season and a freak leg break last year. The man is not injury-prone.
I mean,
injury-prone would be constantly having hamstring injuries. Injury-prone would be tearing his ACL 2 seasons in a row. Okay? He's not injury-prone. Get that narrative the fuck out of here.
It's just funny to me that when it comes to Odell, it seems to be this added pressure because the Giants couldn't seem to put together a roster that could compete while having the luxury of such a dynamic player, you know, basically vastly underpaid.
Yeah.
But then you want to talk about the playoff game and – you know, was it bad?
You know what? I'll counter that with the Jerry Rice stats. I mean,
You can sit here, but if we want to look and say it was bad optics, it was bad optics, and he'll be the first to tell you. But I'm sorry, You know, he's not going to sit here and say, "Oh, you know, I'll play for half of what I'm worth,"
right?
Because of that. No, and he shouldn't. So listen, I understand some fans are used to locking up first round picks. It's been a while since the Giants have done that, and they don't do it often. But when you get a great talent who's, you know, probably not perfect, you know, far from perfect, but he's a great talent, you don't just let it walk out the door because he celebrates too much or he dropped a pass in a playoff game.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work that way.
Man, I'm just happy it's done.
Can't believe we have to explain that to people.
It's wild. People are just willfully ignorant. And
they, you know what they'd rather do? They'd rather say, you know what, we don't need Odell. You know what we should do? We should go out and pay, you know, $60 million for a C-list right tackle.
Yep.
That'll fix our issues.
Unreal. Speaking of the offensive line, can we talk Brett Jones?
The trade.
The trade.
You're upset by this.
I'm very upset by this. And I gotta talk on a few general things before we talk about the actual Brett Jones trade. Because this past week, people have been coming at me on Twitter. They're telling me, Ethan, stop complaining about John Stewart. Ethan, stop bitching about DRC not being here. Ethan, stop bitching about the Brett Jones trade. These are the same fucking people who in 2 or 3 weeks, when the Giants lose someone to injury or Patrick Omame gives up a crucial sack, that are going to be complaining to me about the same things that I'm complaining about right now. So excuse me for getting ahead of the game a little bit, okay? Because we know that these are issues. We know they're issues. The Giants have no secondary depth, and hardly anyone has emerged in the preseason. They have no offensive line depth, and they just traded away a guy who was great depth. And then the John Stewart signing, it all comes into play. Now, were you about to ask me why I'm so upset about the trade?
Yeah. Well, there's two avenues of this.
Okay.
So I'll let you start. Go ahead.
Sure. Just boil it down to what it is. You're trading away solid depth at one of the least fortified positions that the Giants have for a seventh rounder to save $3 million in cap space, right? Blame Jerry Reese, blame Gettleman, blame Kevin Abrams. What it comes down to is that the Giants did not have enough cap space. They literally couldn't buy a fucking cup of coffee if they had tried before the Brett Jones trade. That if someone were to have gone down or got sent to IR, that they legitimately wouldn't have had enough cap space to sign a few guys off the street. All right? So it's head-scratching mismanagement like that that really pisses me off. Now, by all means, and we discussed this after preseason one and preseason two, despite running with the twos, Brett Jones looked like the best center on the roster, right? He has the capability to play guard, and now it's just Jalapia. It's just Jalapia. And when you look at the fact that John Stewart is here for $3 million and they can't cut him for any sort of cap relief this year, it's, you know, Richburg was a proven center they let walk. Jones played well when Richburg went down. He did. He doesn't fit Gettleman's prototypical hog molly. He's a bit undersized. But the run game was significantly better when he was there. And the run game with the ones so far in preseason has not looked good. And there was a second-round tender on Jones, too. And they just gave him up for a seventh. Just to save $3 million, which is what John Stewart is making this year as a useless running back on the roster. Minus 7 yards and a fumble against the Jets. Against a really, really, really weak defensive front, sans Leonard Williams. That's not like an unreal pass rush by any means. And the offensive line struggled to get any sort of push. So I'm a little upset that cap mismanagement led to giving away depth at a position of need. Because if one of these guys goes down, I mean, you saw the right side is horrendous. They need depth. They need a guy like Brett Jones. Especially if he's only here for 1 year. Now, he's going to be great with the Vikings, but it's just small moves like that could have a large effect in 2 or 3 weeks into the regular season. And it's because of poor cap management. That's why it has me bothered.
First of all, if we want to debate Jalapio versus Brett Jones, we can debate that. And, you know, maybe Brett Jones is the better center. Who knows? Like, we can, that's a different discussion. Jonathan Stewart, I mean, listen,
you know, he's a good guy, but the guy just washed up, man. You know, the guy's washed up. I mean, listen, now I hear people say, let's wait until the regular season. I mean, come on, man. Like, the guy can't play. It was clear from the first game that Wayne Gallman is miles ahead of him and should be ahead of him, and I think will be ahead of him. But even before that, I mean, his contract is just ridiculous. For a team that probably knew at that time that they were going to take Saquon Barkley, I mean, for them to invest that much money in a running back, I mean, it's just asinine. But anyways, you got Brett Jones, who you don't – you think you don't want to – he's not going to start. It was clear Jalapio won the starting job. He had been taking first-team reps all summer long and in the preseason. So you trade him, you get the $3 million in cap space back, and then you send him and you get a seventh-round pick. Now, people say, what's a seventh-round pick? Well, in about a week, or not even a week, less than a week, on Saturday, teams are going to cut their roster. Yeah, teams are going to cut their rosters. The Giants are second in waiver claims, meaning they have the second priority. You know that. But what they can do with that, because now they have two seventh-round picks. Remember, they got one from the Rams last year, and they got this one. They traded their seventh-round pick to Denver for Riley Dixon, who's their punter. But you got a seventh-round pick now that you could turn and potentially use for a guy you like that could be getting cut from a team. Remember Ross Cockrell last year? So if you could get a player like Ross Cockrell, who, you know, was a contributor last year when the stuff went on in the secondary, he was pretty good. You do it because essentially you're giving up a guy that wasn't going to start and you just can't afford to pay $3 million to a backup center. Now, what about the offensive line? What about the depth? I like John Greco. I think John Greco deserves some consideration for the right guard spot. I never seen him play center, so I don't know.
I mean, he won't. He won't, but.
He won't.
Omame has been horrendous.
Right. But so you have Greco there, you have John Jerry. So you have some pieces there. So,
but it's dumpster diving, and like the same logic can be used the opposite way, right? If the Giants had someone of Jones's abilities in the secondary, and they let him go to solidify the offensive line, it's just moving pieces around for lack of depth. You know, they're not going to get anyone with that $3 million or that seventh round pick that's going to be a difference maker on the right side of the offensive line.
But is John Greco at guard better or worse than Brett Jones at guard?
I couldn't tell you.
I don't know if that's that big of a drop-off. Now, getting a seventh-round pick, like I said, so we're going to see what happens on this weekend, what they do with the roster and how some stuff gets shaked around and whether or not they try to get some guys from somewhere else that get cut. But, yeah, you know, Jalapio to Flowers, that part of the offensive line has sort of not been good. But I'm waiting to see what happens with, you know, come Saturday, because I think that seventh round pick could be used to get, you know, maybe another offensive lineman in there. Maybe they could, you know, because essentially what you're looking at is if there's a guy you really like, and it doesn't have to be a guy in the secondary. It could be a lineman, could be a linebacker, could be a pass rusher, whatever. You have a tool, an extra tool in that seventh-round pick to get your guy while also having that claim in the waiver wire being number two. So you could get two good players. So we'll see. I'm going to wait and see how this is. But, you know, I'm not here to tell you guys that, you know, Brett Jones isn't better than John Jalapio. But what I can tell you is it's clear that the Giants made Jones the backup. And with him being the backup, $3 million for a backup center, just you couldn't afford that right now.
I mean, that's fine. What it boils down to is I think that Jones is the best center on the roster. I think he's good depth. And I think that now you have Jalapio and Greco. And I personally think that's a downgrade, especially given how weak the right side of the offensive line is. You know, Omame goes down, you're up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. And we'll see what they do in terms of bringing in guys who are cut. But, you know, I'm not looking to have a rotation on the right side of the line, because that might even be worse than the Omame Flowers combo we have right now.
Look, I'm not going to debate you on that, on Jones being better than Jalapio, but all I can say is I just think that if he's not going to be your starter, I can understand with a team that that has under $1 million in cap space would look to shop him around because they need the cap space. So,
I mean, what it boils down to is they needed the cap space and they felt that Jones was, you know, they were able to part ways with him without it being too much of a roster hit. But then you look at some of the wasted money on this roster, it's like, man, I wish that they didn't have to make that decision. But whatever.
Should they cut Jonathan Stewart?
Probably.
You think they should?
Yeah. I mean, you have you obviously have Gallman, who's been playing way better, right? Mm-hmm. He should be your RB2.
Right.
Robert Martin has looked tremendous. And then if they want to keep Shane Smith, I mean, they just don't have enough spots.
The guy they picked up off the street like a couple days before.
Jarrell,
the Jets
what's
game.
His last name?
Presley, yeah.
Yeah, Jarrell Presley looked really good too. I mean, and not to get into the whole, you know, running back in the first round thing again, but to get into it, you can find talent at that position very easily. Maybe not as good as Saquon, but in terms of value, it's out there.
I mean, I think it has to be on the table with Jonathan Stewart's future.
Yeah, but I want to say it is, but then you have Gettleman coming out and saying that they believe in him.
But here's my thing. Here's my thing, okay? And I don't want to make this whole episode about Stewart. But,
that's fine. Yeah, we'll move on after this.
You know, we talk about like locker room culture and locker room morale and all that stuff, right? Like we talk about that with the Giants. Now they need to fix that, right? Well, how can you just – like we see it. You know, he's clearly the third, maybe fourth best running back on the roster right now. I mean, how can the Giants, who are trying to rebuild their locker room, trying to establish a culture, tell a guy like Robert Martin or Jalen Simmons that, you know what, you guys are not making the roster because we feel like Jonathan Stewart's better?
I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, if that's what it comes down to and they don't want to eat the cap space by cutting Stewart, then it is what it is. Then Jarrell or Simmons or Martin, one of them is going to wind up on a team after having proven themselves in the preseason.
Now, are they trying to sneak him onto the practice squad? Maybe,
but I mean, they've all played so well this preseason.
And especially when Robert Martin.
And when you consider how, like, there's been no consistent run blocking, especially from the right side of the offensive line. And you're going to need young guys like Martin and Simmons who are able to, you know, compensate for that. Stewart's just washed. He doesn't have the agility, and he can't just be running into Omame and Flowers' cheeks all day. So at the end, it's you can't do it. You just can't do it.
He's very slow. Mm-hmm. Saquon is going to mask some of the O-line
100%.
Issues. 100%. Stewart cannot.
Agree.
Stewart, and maybe Gallman can as well. Stewart cannot. He's just too slow.
Too slow. Let's move on before we get into some notes from the Jets game. Weiss, what would you do if you were Odell Beckham and you just signed that new contract?
Oh man.
Would you frame it? Would you print out that contract and frame it?
I wouldn't frame it, no, but I would probably throw like a nice party.
Nice party. Well,
yeah.
I would probably frame it. And now that I know that Odell's on the team for the next 6 years, I might get a poster of him. Maybe a one-handed catch poster that have nice and mounted right above my bed next to my David Tyree one-handed catch. And that's why you guys should go to posterburner.com/GothamSN. They do it all. You got photos from a vacation, photos of your girlfriend, photos of Odell Beckham. They're nice, but they're just sitting on social media. What are you going to do with them? You're going to take them to posterburner.com/GothamSN. It's affordable. It's easy to use. It took me 5 minutes to get my Odell poster framed in a 24x36 movie-sized poster. Under $20. They make premium canvas prints, metal prints, decals, stickers, banners, and more. Go take that money to posterburner.com/GothamSN and get yourself a nice poster of Odell Beckham, the best wide receiver in the league. Let's move on to the Jets game. I'll let you start because I didn't watch this game from start to finish. I was at my parents' birthday celebration watching them get drunk while I had to drive home. So where do you want to start on the Giants-Jets preseason game?
To me, the one eye-popping thing was Eli Manning's performance. Yep. I thought he looked really solid. He looked like a guy that really trusts his offensive line, looked composed, looked confident. He played really, really well, along with the left side of the offensive line, Nate Solder. I mean, he was great in pass blocking.
Will Hernandez does not look like a rookie. Sterling Shepard, I mean, made some great catches. I think he had caught all seven of his targets.
He did, yep.
77 yards. I was really impressed by that, Eli and Sterling Shepard. The pass rush, again, I really, really liked, you know, the blitzing. I really liked the pass rush. Olivier Vernon, hope he can be ready for week one with that ankle injury. Yep. But he had a great game. So I'm excited to see that going into week, how that progresses going into week one. Stuff I didn't like is stuff that we've, it's been our concern, I don't know, since this whole training camp started. The secondary, the right side of the offensive line, linebackers, specifically linebackers in coverage, Alec Ogletree. So concerns are the same. Positives are, you know, it looks like, you know, Eli Manning is more composed, rejuvenated. So we'll see if that carries over into the regular season.
Biggest concern for me is the fact that I feel like we're not learning anything new when it comes to the secondary or any of the guys competing for offensive line snaps. Now, you brought up a couple of the guys who played well. I'll read out some of the stats. Nate Solder, unreal. Highest pass blocking grade among offensive line starters with an 88.6. Zero quarterback pressures in 24 pass blocking snaps. Eli finished with a 77.7 overall grade, which is second among preseason quarterbacks in week three with a minimum of 20 dropbacks. His adjusted completion percentage was 82.6. You brought it up. He looks real comfortable in the Shurmur offense. And that should be no surprise to anyone, given Shurmur's history making, you know, average and mediocre quarterbacks, even bad quarterbacks, look serviceable to good, especially with his work in Minnesota. You brought up the defense, Olivier Vernon, three quarterback pressures, including a hit and two hurries. He was unreal. And Dalvin Tomlinson, I mean, I know people expect a lot, but I feel like he goes as sort of the unsung hero with people talking about Snacks and Olivier Vernon most of the time. 20% run stop percentage, which was third among NFL defensive interior defensive linemen from week three of the preseason. He also had two run stops. So, I mean, listen, at the end of the day, it's good stuff out of the guys you're expecting a lot out of. Again, for me, it's the secondary. It's no one emerging in that second safety spot. It's no one emerging. You know, Eli Apple had a decent game. I guess he got called for a pass interference. But again, it's an area of weakness. You get one injury, you guys, you're fucked. You're absolutely fucked.
Capital P.
Yeah, with a capital PH. I mean, for me, those are pretty much all the notes that I have from the Jets game. Anything that you're looking forward to in the Patriots game, in the final preseason game?
One more thing I'll say about the Jets game. B.J. Hill looks like he's going to be a really good player.
Bro,
in this
I said it last week. He's getting snaps with the one, and he's been a force. He might be low-key the steal of the draft. And, you know, throw him alongside Dalvin Tomlinson in terms of guys who probably aren't getting the recognition they deserve for their really good preseason play.
Yeah, he because when you talk about the D-line, you talk about Vernon, you talk about Harrison, but, I mean, B.J. Hill, Dalvin Tomlinson, two guys are doing fantastic job and helping creating a solid rotation. Now, the fourth preseason game, the one that's sort of least exciting, yep. Right? What is there to look forward to? Well, looking forward to seeing if Pat Shurmur plays the starting offensive line in this game. I really can't learn much about him because you're going to be going against guys that probably won't be employed or not all of them will be employed come week one. Looking to see if, is there a corner out there? Dante Dion coming off injury, can he be a corner? Is, you know, Grant Haley, the undrafted guy who played pretty well against the Jets. I mean, is there anyone that's going to emerge? And then I'm anxious to see the running backs because, listen, we talked about it a little bit earlier. I don't know if the Giants are going to release Jonathan Stewart. I don't think that they will. But if Robert Martin, if Jalen Simmons, if they continue to play as well as they've had in this, you know, this preseason, I mean, what do you do if you're the Giants? I mean, do you have to at least consider it? So I'm anxious to see these running backs, and I'm anxious to see if one of them or two of them have that type of game where it sort of makes you sit back and be like, wait, can we cut these guys and keep Jonathan Stewart just because of his contract? So I'm anxious to see those running backs too, because they're going to play their best because they know if it ain't the Giants, it's going to be for somebody else.
Right. It's yeah, it's an audition. The whole preseason has been an audition for guys like Jalen Simmons and Robert Martin. And it, you know, it'd be a shame to see them have to go elsewhere because they both played so well.
Right.
You want to get into some questions?
Sure.
All right. This one's from Ethan, great name, and I swear it's not me. Is Odell the most important non-quarterback player to his team in today's NFL? This is a great question.
Yes. Because look, I mean, the first thing people say was, "What about Pittsburgh, Antonio Brown, and Le'Veon Bell?" Well, if they lose Antonio Brown, they got Le'Veon Bell who can help them. If they lose, you know, Le'Veon Bell, they got Antonio Brown. So nobody there. I think he is the most important non-quarterback to his team. Maybe Ezekiel Elliott's with him.
Yep.
In terms of, you know, probably a guy that we could argue, but let's take some of those linemen off the Cowboys.
And I like the two guys you obviously Odell, and I like the fact you threw out Zeke. I think Zeke he's got to be up there. If it's not Odell, it's got to be Zeke. Another guy would be Hopkins, just given his performance and the numbers that he put up without Deshaun Watson and with guys like Tom Savage at quarterback. I feel like he's got to be up there as well. I think that's a pretty solid top three: Zeke, Odell, and Nuke.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah, and if we're forgetting guys, let us know. This is a good one. Will great leader Jay Stu end the season with more or less rushing yards than Eli?
Oh man.
Yeah. This one's from Big Money Banks. Will Eli complete more than 63% of his passes? And with this Shermer offense, can Eli have a 5,000-yard passing season? Can OBJ have a 1,500-yard year with 10-plus touchdowns? I'll say absolutely not to Eli having 5,000 yards. Odell with 1,500, that's going to be a stretch. 10 touchdowns, definitely. 1,500 is going to be tough with all the weapons in this offense.
Yeah, Eli Manning is not throwing for 5,000 yards. Not at
you hope he throws for 4.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know.
Who's the last? Breeze?
I mean, how old is Drew Brees?
Late 30s.
First of all, is Drew Brees, what is he, 30, what, 30? I don't even.
Guess, I'd say 37.
He's 39 right now. Okay. And I think in 2016, he threw for 5,200 yards.
Yeah, I mean, 5,000 is just out of the realm of possibility.
So there's been no other.
Eli's arm would fall off.
Yeah, I don't think there's ever been a 37-year-old quarterback to throw. I think Peyton did it as well in 2013 with Denver. But was he 37? I mean, point is there hasn't been many 37-year-old quarterbacks to throw for 5,000 yards, and I don't think Eli Manning's going to do it either.
Right.
Your second question, 1,500 yards, 10 touchdowns for Odell. I'm with you, man. I think it's going to be under on the yards. I think he's going to be right around that 1,200-yard mark. And touchdowns.
He's going to give us what we've seen. 1,200, 1,300 yards with minimum 11 touchdowns, I think.
90 receptions, 1,200 yards, 10 touchdowns.
Agree. From Jordan, who finishes the season with more receptions, Shep or Engram?
Ooh.
Got to be Engram. I know people are excited with what they've seen from Shepard this preseason, but keep in mind that is without Barkley playing most of the preseason and without Odell playing any of the preseason. So those three are going to eat up a majority of the receptions. I think Shepard's the one who's going to suffer the most from it. Not to say that he's not a talented player, but in terms of just numbers, there's just too many mouths to feed, and I think that a lot of it's going to go to Engram because he's way more of a mismatch than Shepard is.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. That's all I got for the questions. You got anything else you want to talk about before we end the show?
No, that's it.
I'm back jiffing this week. I'm back.
Yeah, it should be fun.
I think next week I'm going to come to you guys with some gambling for the 2018 NFL season, some regular season win over-unders, I want to see what you guys think. I read him the Weiss before the show. He disagreed with me on a lot of them, but we'll see if the money shows.
We'll do our season preview next week.
Yes, we will. And I promise we'll be more organized than we were this week. crazy week. That's it. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow me, Ethan GSN. Follow Weiss, NYG Daily. Follow the blog at Gotham SN. Subscribe. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify. Can't forget Spotify. If you got everyone's got Spotify, go subscribe on Spotify. That's about it. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Peace.